The message you are about to hear is brought to you by Art Bradick. And now, Mr. Bradick.
Well, thank you, Mr. Moore, once again for about the 100th time. And greetings to all of you. You know, I'm really glad that I was able to make it services today. I didn't think I'd be able to get here, actually. I had a knockdown, drag-out fight with my wife. But don't worry, she came to me crawling on her hands and knees. That's right, she came to me on her hands and knees. And she said, Art Bradick, you get out from underneath that bed and fight like a man. I'm kidding about that. Mary's one of the kindest people I've ever met. And the tale, though, is an opening to a message that I want to give about human relationships. So let's go over to 1 Corinthians 1. The Carnegie Technological Institute did an interesting study. They found an incredible truth existed about those who failed in their vocation. They actually said 90% of those people who fail in their vocation has nothing to do with their work skills. 90% of those who fail do so because of relationship problems. That's why they fail. They can't get along with other people. And I want you to put this in the context of our spiritual vocation, which is to seek the kingdom of God. The primary objective in our vocation is to get along with people, to learn how to love others, dealing with people. If we can't learn to get along with others, if we can't learn to get along together, we will be one of those who actually fail in our quest for the kingdom. But some might say, hey, wait, isn't our calling to learn about God's law and to learn how to keep his laws? I go, of course it is. But the last six commandments are all about what? There's four of them about God and our relationship with him. There's six of them about how we deal with people. That's the emphasis on us, to love God and to love our neighbor. And this is so vital to us. And so let's read this. 1 Corinthians 1:26. For you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, or mighty men, or noble, are called. We all think that applies to everybody else, I'm sure, but it probably applies to all of us. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things that are mighty, and the base things of the world, and the things that are despised, God has chosen. Yes, the things which are not, to bring to naught the things that are. Looking forward to that time. And why does he do all this? So that no flesh will glory in his presence. No flesh will glory in his presence. And to glory in his presence means to start thinking somehow we're better than others. It is thinking others should recognize us. But think, Christ called all of us. He called all of us with our weaknesses. And with all of those weaknesses, we are required to learn to serve him. Look, Christ explained the reason why this is so important, and he said this. I ask you to listen carefully. Truly, I say unto you, inasmuch as you've done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, you have done it unto me. Think about the meaning of these words. Christ actually lives in us, and the way we treat others is a reflection exactly of how we would treat him. And he's looking at this. He's looking at it. He's aware of it. So if we're respectful, helpful towards others, he knows we'll be that way with him. If we're disrespectful towards other Christians, we are disrespectful to Jesus Christ. And we should stand a little fear of that. That's my point today. Moreover, I ask you to think about this. Christ actually wants to know something, and it's an additional truth here. If we are disrespectful to others, we will be disrespectful toward him if we're in his kingdom. Do you understand how this is a qualifier or disqualifier right here? This is it. And this is why, actually, our greatest trial is our greatest blessing. The great trial is to have loving fellowship with other Christians. There's no question attaining such relationships are difficult sometimes. They're difficult because our personalities are so incredibly different. All of the experiences we have by the time we get to adulthood are different. All of our perceptions are different. All of our perspectives are different. John 13. But it's by this, is what he says. It's by this, how we get along with each other, that other people will know we actually are his disciples. Isn't that what he says? Yes. That's how anybody can tell. It's how we get along with other people. So he's expecting others to look at us and see Christ-like behavior. They're to see him in our attitudes and in our actions. And each one of us, I believe, has this personal ministry to perform. You know, we realize that Christ is much greater and much more than we ever had dreamed of, that we ever had realized. We realize this now, and we want to learn to be like him, and we want to learn, and we can learn and must learn by the way we treat others the way we want to be treated. And that message is written throughout the Bible. So it's by our actions we share our beliefs with the world. So, you know, it's funny how we enjoy talking to other people about the truth because we seem to know more than they do. And so it's just something I see takes place in people all the time. But our truth is actually realized more fully than we understand by an exercise we do every year. We wash one another's feet. And that pictures our desire to serve one another. And so, at the end of that service, we read this. In verse 34, a new commandment I give unto you. Oh, we claim to keep the commandments. But he's giving us another commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you, you should also love one another. Man, that's profound. Are you kidding? Love other people the way he loved us? A self-sacrificing love? That's what he's calling upon us to do. How will the world know about what love is? How do they know it? Reading a booklet about Revelation and fiery plagues? How are they going to know? Is it just seeing a TV spot on television about the commandments? Because I say the genuine test of Christianity lies right here. It's loving one another. It's helping one another. It's serving one another. Once heard a profound statement, took me some time to learn the full meaning of it, but I want you to listen closely because it was once said, apart from the church, salvation is impossible. The author didn't mean that the church provides salvation at all. What he meant was that we can't fulfill what it means to be a Christian on our own. You understand? Alone. We can't do that. We need each other to do it. And that's the whole point of him saying, don't forsake the assembling of yourselves together. Why? So that we interact, and so we learn to serve and help and love one another, in spite of a few warts. So together, we experience different personalities, different backgrounds, different levels of conversion, and all of this mix of differences, we learn to love one another, and we learn what it means to love. And I know it's not as easy as it sounds. It's easy to say that. But I say this, sometimes we just forget the whole purpose of why we're called. We go off tangent, off God's path, and we get on a tangent of our own sometimes. And to me, there's an example of this in a story. Person who read a comment on Facebook. A friend had quoted a part of a booklet. The entire thread developed over several days with people commenting about what he meant. Some people became angry. Fights began, and other people began to block other people about this argument they were having on Facebook. Finally, one wise lady jumped into the fray, and she said this, "Why hasn't someone simply asked the person what they meant?" It's funny, isn't it? It's funny that we even let something like this happen, but I don't mean funny in a ha-ha way. I mean it's peculiar, weird. You know, what a good point. So it's an interesting quote is this. Listen carefully again. A single moment of misunderstanding can make us forget 100 of lovable moments. That's true, isn't it? There's all kinds of good things we share, and we have wonderful times, but one mistake, one offense, and we can forget hundreds of things that we've experienced. That's human nature, and that's what we're here to overcome, and that's why we're called, and that's the purpose of assembling together. That's the purpose of working together. Go over to Romans 12, if you will. Romans 12. You know, it's easy to misunderstand. I know our communication skills are not like God's, where he knows what we're thinking. But each of us should want to learn to develop a Christ-like love. And each of us should feel this way. You've got a friend in me. You understand what I'm saying? Every one of us here has a friend in the other person. And they should be aware of that. They should feel that. And they should trust in that, that we are friends. Sometimes we might say the wrong thing. We might do the wrong thing. It doesn't mean we don't love you or love the other person. It's just we still have a friend. They're still there for us, and their intent is generally good. And so I say this. We actually should be devoted to one another, warts and all. Scriptures are not just nice poetry. They're bold. They're invincible truth. And the author of Hebrews says this, that God's word is like a sharp sword and it cuts right to the heart. And that's what I wanted to do today. I want to cut right to our hearts, and I want us to open those hearts and see that we are not the people that have Philadelphia love, that we see each other as brothers. That's what we're supposed to do. That's what we say we are. We're the Philadelphia era of the Church of God, the Church of Brotherly Love. Where is that brotherly love? So anyway, God discerns the thoughts and the motives of our heart. So we better guard those things, don't you think? You know, it's our chance. It's our chance to show him what we're made of spiritually. Romans 12 and verse 9. Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil and cleave to that which is good. So dissimulation is hypocrisy. So let's not be hypocritical towards one another is what he's saying here. Honor each other as if they're greater than us. That's pretty clear, isn't it? It's pretty clear. Honor the other person as if they were greater than you. Honor them and respect them in that way. So we're to have the same high regard for each person. Verse 10, be kindly affection one to another with brotherly love, in honor, preferring one another. Hate that which is evil. Hate jealousies. Hate anger. Hate backbiting. I remember an illustration that's so funny to me. Father heard the commotion going on in the backyard when he was in the house. He ran out. The kids were yelling. They were screaming at each other, actually. And the father ran out there and he said, what's going on? And his daughter said, don't worry, Dad. We're just playing church. Don't be slothful in business, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord, rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing instant in prayer, distributing to the necessity of saints, and given to hospitality. You know, we're diligent in the workplace because we're actually serving Christ and not the boss we work for. We're always hopeful. Even in the tough times, we have hope that things will get better or that we can contribute in a positive way. But it says to give hospitality to all the saints. When we're together, we're actually to serve one another. And hospitality is a beautiful thing, really. Gave an entire sermon on it, but you understand it's got the same root word as hospital or hospice. Because when you invite people over and you eat together and share a meal together, it's a healing process is what it is. And that's where we get to know people more intimately. And that's where we can share together. And that's why so many times the Bible talks about hospitality. So we're striving to not be like the people in the world. And in that case, in the world, if somebody hurts somebody, whether it's by accident or on purpose, they start a fight. In our case, we wish them the best. Can you see that? That's what Christ would do. He's not trying to hurt anybody, you know? He just would wish people the best. So my point is, again, to have love for one another. This is the issue. This is the second commandment, and this is what is so lacking in the church of God overall. Verse 14, bless them which persecute you. Bless and curse not. Paul's talking about something here. It's the term empathy. You know, we understand sympathy. We feel bad if somebody's suffering, something like that. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about empathy. And that's where we put ourselves in the other person's shoes and we strive to feel what they're feeling. So if somebody comes at us and they're screaming because of something we did, we don't fight back. We go, we want to hear. We want to understand what where they're coming from before we even think about answering them. So we strive to put ourselves in their position and feel what they do. Look at what's going on in their lives. Try to look at how they see things in their eyes, what in their experience. Verse 16, be of the same mind, one towards another. Don't mind high things, but condescend to men of low estate. Don't be wise in your own conceits. You know, thinking we're better than others is what conceit is all about, and it's part of our human nature to automatically do that. And from God's perspective, it is conceit. That's what it is. Don't be wise in your conceits. It's a spiritual disaster. From God's point of view, no one's really better. We may be better in math than somebody else. We may be better in English than somebody else. We may be more generous than some other people. We may be more judicial with our money. Some people might be artistic. Some people might be minimalist. Everybody's different. You understand? Every personality, every single chromosome in us is different from everybody else. And so some are generous and maybe some aren't, you know? But my point today is, look, you and I don't get any credit for what talents we do have. You don't get credit for that. You are created from God. What you have, the abilities you have, your intelligence, you know, your different personality traits, all are a gift from God to be used wisely for His purpose. So we can't take any credit for that. 17 through 21, so recompense no man evil for evil, but provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lies in you, live peaceably with all men or women. Dearly beloved, he says, don't avenge yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it's written, vengeance is mine, I will repay. Do we really believe that? Do we believe if somebody goes against us or somebody hurts us, that God will take care of it in the end? Do we believe that, or do we think we have to strike back? Therefore, if your enemy hungers, feed him. If he they're talking about enemies, not brethren. If your enemy hungers, feed him. If he thirsts, give him drink, for in so doing you shall reap coals of fire on his head. Be not overcome of evil. Overcome evil with good. You see that as a mission? You see that as a commission from the Creator? Overcome the evil that's in the world, whatever happens to us, whether it's bad or good or whatever, overcome it in our lives. Don't let it affect us. Don't let it mold us. Don't let us have to strike out the way they do. No matter what happens, our job is to do good. Never return evil for evil. But the problem is, look, sometimes we return evil for what's perceived evil. Consider Mabel. She was bitten by a rabid dog. This is a story. Okay. She was bitten by a rabid dog. At the doctor's office, she was miserable and suffering terribly. She had a fever. She was vomiting. She was having hallucinations. And the doctor talked to her. And she was like really upset. And he told her, look, what you've got here is rabies. And this is really serious. And he said, you know what you might want to do is put your final affairs in order in case it gets worse. And she grabbed a piece of paper and she began writing furiously. She was writing and writing and writing and writing. And he says to, the doctor says to her, you know, that's a pretty long list you're making there. You know, that's really a long list you're making for your will. She said, will? Will? Oh, no. This is the list of all the people I'm going to bite before I die. Okay, Romans 14. You know, getting back at other people that have hurt us is a very slippery slope. Sometimes we think we know the motives of others. Trust me, we seldom ever do. It's communication is hard enough when we're on the same track. And when we're not on the same track, it gets even worse. We act on our judgment. Many times we're wrong. And I ask us, think, who do we think we are to judge somebody else? Who do we think we are? So God tells us to remember this enormous truth in Romans 14. He's the judge. We're not the judge. Verse 13, let us not therefore judge one another any more. Got that? But judge this rather, that no man put a stumbling block or an occasion to fall in his brother's way. So let's go back to John 17. John 17. We've got to be able to work together as one. We claim that we're all a part of God's family, and we want to work together now because it's practice for working in God's kingdom. And it's so important to me what we do and what we're working toward is for all humanity's sake. that we're going to be able to teach the rest of the world if we make it there. And that's an issue, I think, is at hand here. So to that end, God is watching what we do in this life now. He perceives what we think. He knows we can work together or if in a united way or if we can't. So how do we work together now? How do we do that? Do we love one another now? To me, it's the most important issue in our lives. Keeping the Ten Commandments is not a difficult thing, but learning to love one another when we're flawed is the really difficult thing. But I say this, and I say it without equivocation. This is the issue that God is going to judge whether or not we make it into the kingdom or not, because we're going to be working with people there. And if we can't get it right now to a degree he approves of, how could he possibly put us in the kingdom and over cities and populations then? How could he do that? To me, it's this. It's this that's going to determine if we'll be in God's kingdom or not the most. I know it all counts, but this is of so much importance. It's the second commandment. Listen to the words of Christ here. John 17, verse 18. As you have sent me into the world, even so I also sent them into the world. And for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they might also be sanctified through the truth. Neither pray I for these alone, now he's talking about us, but I pray for them also which shall believe on me through their word, that they may all be one, as you, Father, are in me, and I in you, that they may also be one in us, that the world may believe that you have sent me. Wow, heavy. And the glory which you gave me, I've given them, that they may be one, even as we are one. I and them, you and me, that they may be made perfect in one, that the world may know that you sent me and you have loved them as you have loved me. Man, oh man, that's a heavy responsibility on our part to do this. But that's what the game is all about. If you let me put it that way, that this is a serious issue. Hebrews 12, a most serious issue. Hebrews 12. We are to be one with Christ who lives in us and one with one another. And that all sounds good, but what if our feelings get hurt? In all honesty, most of the time, when we get our feelings hurt, it wasn't done on purpose most of the time. And I think that you could always apply my favorite solution if your feelings get hurt. And that's, so what? So what? God's going to take care of it in his time. So what if somebody hurts your feelings? So what if somebody does you wrong? Do you understand that life is just this tiny little piece of time compared to all eternity? So what if we suffer a loss? What does it matter in the long run? What matters is how we take it if we get our feelings hurt. What matters is how we take it if we suffer some kind of loss. That's what he's looking at. And so let's make up our mind. You can always use my, I don't know what to call it exactly, but so what? You know, even if they hurt us on purpose, what is that compared to eternity? You know, we have to admit, each one of us, we have not resisted to blood yet. A word on Facebook, a word spoken that we took wrong, we get upset about it. We haven't resisted to blood. You got hurt feelings? Consider Christ's suffering. Hebrews 12 and verse 3. Consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be weary and faint in your minds. You have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. So still, in spite of his sacrifice staring us in the face, you know, we let things become personal, and we can drive people to distance themselves from us. Proverbs 21. These pages are so thin and my fingers are so fat. Proverbs 21. Mark Twain wrote something that I think was cute. He said, maybe it's an experiment we should all try. And he said, put a dog and a cat in the same cage. They may not like each other, but after a while, they get used to it, don't they? They tolerate each other. Eventually, they get along. He said, put a bird, a pig, and a goat in there. And after a while, they'll kind of get along with each other, you know. But he said, try to put a Baptist, Presbyterian, and Methodist together. Maybe nothing left, he said, after a while. It's the tongue. Incredible, destructive, blazing fire can be produced. Our answer? Don't endorse gossip by listening to it. Proverbs 21 and verse 23. Whoso keeps his mouth and his tongue keeps his soul from troubles. What a profound statement that is. Ephesians 4. So I'm asking today that mercy be extended by the people of God among all of the rest of the people of God. And I say this because I think we should realize that in some cases we inadvertently hurt people. We don't mean to, you know. And sometimes people are hurt and they're just not sophisticated enough to realize, you know, that it wasn't done on purpose. But there's also another unintentional reason that we can hurt others. And sometimes in life, you and I suffer things that are difficult, and we are hurt, and we carry that pain inside us. And so we're very sensitive, more sensitive than others. And so inadvertently, we, you know, someone may tell a joke or make an offhanded remark, and yet we, it's like an arrow cutting through us because we're sensitive to it. So what we often see from other people is just what they're trying to cover up inside, the pain, the suffering they've gone through, just growing up sometimes. They're trying to cover that. They're trying to deal with that. And so they're extra sensitive. And so, you know, I think we should be aware of that and be careful with people. Because the last thing we need to do is to respond in anger to individuals who already have pain that they're feeling. There was a German philosopher, Schopenhauer. He put it this way. Humans are like porcupines, he said, huddling together in the cold. He said, the colder it gets outside, the more we want to huddle together. The closer we get, the more we hurt each other with our quills. And we begin to drift apart and wander out on our own. Then we experience the cold spiritual agony of our loneliness. But Christ has given us the only sensible, the only real alternative, and that is to forgive each other for the pokes we receive, and it allows us to be together and stay warm and stay in His care. And quarreling is always death to truth. Ephesians 4 and verse 31. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be you kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another. Listen, as God has forgiven you. If God has forgiven us, what right do we have to not forgive other people? Colossians 3. Colossians 3. You know, how can we spew out all kinds of anger, bitterness on others if Christ forgave us? How can we vent our anger when we have been forgiven by Him? How do we justify that in our mind? How do we speak evil of others when God speaks love to us? How do we do that? Colossians 3 and verse 12. Colossians 3 and verse 12. Put on, therefore, as the elect of God, holy and beloved, bowels of mercies, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness, long-suffering. That means to put up with me for a long time. That's what that means. Forbearing one another and forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even so as Christ forgave you, do also you. And above all things, put on charity, that is love. That's the bond of perfectness. Let the peace of God rule in your hearts, to which you're also called in one body, and be you thankful. Just forgive other people. Be thankful for the calling, for the hope we have of a future that is glorious. And a hope is not just glorious, but it's a hope where we can make a real difference. We can't make a big difference in life now. We don't. We're a speck on this earth. But in the kingdom of God, if we're able to do that and help people and rule over cities and help them enjoy life and be fulfilled and see their purpose, what more could a person want? And it's been offered to us. But here's how we take it. We've got to love those people. You understand what I'm saying? Can you imagine God saying, well, I'm going to give you cities and there's going to be all these people in them and we're not loving toward them? Because we're not loving towards one another now? Isn't that a mismatch? Isn't that sort of a gaping hole there? Doesn't fit. We've got to do it now if we hope to do it later. It's a must. It's a must. Forgive one another. Love each other in spite of the bristles. 1 Peter 3. 1 Peter 3. Every one of us experience this to one degree or another. Perhaps at school or perhaps in our neighborhood. There was someone always who never fit in. Do you remember that? There was always that person that never fit in. They were often teased. They were mistreated. And it's interesting how sometimes it comes back in life. Well, it came back to Jackie Robinson. He experienced that very treatment as an adult. He faced hostile crowds at every single stadium. And the reason was simply his color. It wasn't anything he did wrong. He was a fine player, you know. But he was playing at his home stadium and he made an error. And the crowd began to jeer. They began to boo him and just mock and ridicule him. We're talking thousands of people all at one time. And he's standing on second base and his head is down. And he is just so incredibly humiliated. And he thought, this is the end for me. This is the end. And then Pee Wee Reese came out of the dugout and went up and put his arm around Jackie Robinson. And they looked at the crowd together. And the crowd stopped jeering. But that's our job, isn't it? You understand what he felt? And he said, him putting his arm around me saved my career. What if us putting our arm around one another saves our calling? It's way more important than even that. I've seen times when an arm around a brother or sister has saved another's faith, kept them going. It means so much to be accepted by others. It means so much to be valued by other people. And yet there's times we fail to provide this basic emotional need every one of us has. Love each other as brothers and sisters. 1 Peter 3 and verse 8. Finally, be you all of one mind, having compassion one another. Love as brethren. Be pitiful and be courteous, not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrariwise blessing, knowing that you are thereunto called, that you should would inherit a blessing. For he that will love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil, and his lips that they speak no guile. Let him eschew evil, that is, just shoo it away, get rid of it, and do good. Seek peace, and peace and ensue it, seek it. For the eyes of the Lord are over the righteous, his ears are open to their prayers, but the face of the Lord, them that do evil. So he's watching our every move. You know, it's recorded in his book. You know, it's so important. 1 John 4, God says we're to love his brethren. And we are. I mean, if we are committed to seeking the kingdom, if we're committed to seeking the kingdom together, we are brethren. And I remind us that love is more than just a feeling. We've got to express our love in the things that we do. It's important for us. And the greatest love comes to me not just from things we think to do, but there is a spirit in us. And if we do acts towards others that emanate from this Spirit of God in us, those will be lasting acts, memorable acts. They'll be encouraging acts. They'll be bonding acts. And when we speak, they should be words of sincerity. 1 John 4 and 17. Herein, he writes, is our love made perfect, in that we may have boldness in the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear, because fear has torment. He that fears is not made perfect in love. We love him because he first loved us. So if any man says, I love God, but hates his brother, he's a liar. For he that loves not his brother whom he has seen, how can he not love God whom he's not seen? And this commandment we have from him, that he who loves God loves his brother also. That's the command. That's it. Pretty simple. Ephesians 4, though, we'll end there. Ephesians 4. There's simply no better way to say it to me. No better way to say it. We must have a loving relationship with God first. And then out of that should come a love for one another. And in that kind of love, there is enormous strength. And I would suggest that we listen to Paul's admonition here, and act in a way that reflects our calling. For Ephesians 4, 1 through 3. Therefore I, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation where you are called, with all lowliness and meekness, with long-suffering, bearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There's one body and one Spirit, and even as you're called in one hope of your calling. And so These are words I want us to remember. Endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. It's our unity that makes us strong, brethren. And I want to give one last example. There's a father that heard his boys out in the back, and they were arguing, fighting too. And he went out to see what was going on, and he told his oldest son, he said, come here. Gave him a stick. And he said, let me see, tough guy. Let me see you break it. So the son takes it, and he snaps it, smirk on his face. And the father gives him another stick, puts two sticks, and he breaks those. Then he gives him three, then he gives him four, then he gives him five, then he gives him six, and he couldn't break them. And the father said, you get the point? We've got to stick together. If we don't stick together, we're going to not be strong. And he said, a house divided can't stand. We can be defeated alone, but if we stand together, we have a strength that is unbreakable. So I'm asking us, let's stand together in striving to actually live the love of Christ. Let's strive to live together in love, just like Christ desires us to do.